D-Mace Finnegan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. We are proudly presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Something else that's not ordinary. This Final Four, which starts tomorrow, Florida and Auburn in the first game, Houston and Duke in the second. As many of you all know, this is just the second time in the modern tournament era that all four number one seeds are still standing on the final weekend of the season. But when you dig a little bit deeper into this Final Four and these combatants in the Final Four, this to me may be the most competitive Final Four we have ever seen. And if you use the KenPom net ratings, the efficiency ratings on KenPom, these four teams are four of the highest teams in the KenPom era, which dates back nearly 30 years. All four of these teams have a legitimate claim to winning the national title. I don't think you'll see any upsets. If Houston beats Duke, and Duke is the favorite to win, if Houston beats Duke, it will not be a shocking upset. Auburn and Florida have already played this season. Florida went to Auburn, smacked them around. If Auburn wins on Saturday, it's not going to be a huge upset. It wouldn't be an upset anyway because Auburn is the number one overall seed. But I think any outcome, guys, I think they're all in play, right? Like, If Houston beats Duke and Auburn beats Florida and Houston beats Auburn, Houston's a really good team. Like, I do not see a scenario where we have an underwhelming or undeserving national champion.
I was looking at the KenPom ratings, and you just kind of gave it the general thought that they all have elite ratings. And I separated it even one step further. They're all top 10 efficiency in offense and defense. Some are a little bit higher or lower in the top 10. Houston, by the way, has the number one defense. They're at number 10, the offense. But they're all in that top 10 range. Auburn has slipped down a little bit from where they were at the midpoint of the season, where they were heading towards in maybe a historic level, especially offensive efficiency. It's dropped a little bit. But at the same time, they're all way up there. So I agree with you. There's not a big underdog. There's not an unexpected guest. All four teams could win it. So I think we might see a classic or two in there.
You look at these four games, and each one of these teams – at least three of the four teams have a Player of the Year candidate.
By the way, Cooper Flagg, AP Player of the Year. Yeah, take that, AP. Rex Road, if you're listening in San Antonio.
Flagg, Broom, and Clay. It was the other kid from
Walter Clayton?
Yeah, Walter Clayton. Walter Clayton.
From Florida.
Florida. Good. So you got three out of the top four teams, three of them have guys that could have won. Cooper Flagg has been named AP Player of the Year, but that are in the running for Player of the Year.
And Houston may not have that marquee player.
But they got some really good players.
They've got some dogs on that team. That is a really good team.
So you look at this team, you look at this bracket of four, this remaining four teams, and you're right. This is probably, and maybe because all number ones made it. And, in past years, we haven't seen all number ones make it. So you can kind of, there's a difference between, the number one team playing the number three team. Not to say the number three seeded team is a bad team, but the number one team made it. They look like the number one team, the number three team. If they win, that would be considered an upset, because they were the third, team ranked in their respective region. But in this one, they're all number ones. And no matter who wins, unless it's just – the only thing that I think that would surprise anything is if these games are blowouts, complete blowouts. I think that would be the surprise in it, because I don't – I think each team that you play against play great defense, really good defense, but they can also score as well. So when you have that mixture, it's like, unless it's a blowout, you don't see – it's just like, okay, the best team won. I can see that team winning. Well, I can see that team, you know, not winning.
That's my point, is like if you – if your bracket has any particular outcome with these four teams, I don't think any of them would be shocking. If your bracket has Duke beating Houston, Auburn beating Florida, and Auburn beating Duke, that would not be a shock. If you have Florida beating Auburn, Houston beating Duke, and Houston beating Florida, I don't think that would be a shock either. Like that, and there's been a lot of conjecture about the lack of Cinderella in this tournament. And look, we all enjoy that aspect of it, but I want to see the best teams in the country vying for a national title, which is what you're absolutely going to get on Saturday and in the national title game on Monday. So to me, you know, looking at these individual matchups, you know, the question I have about the first game, which is Auburn and Florida, and Florida went to Auburn this season, and Florida handled Auburn in that game.
And I would say during that time is when Auburn was probably most prone to getting beat. They had won a bunch of games that everybody was talking about them.
At that point, the only game that Auburn had lost was to Duke on the road in the ACC-SEC challenge.
And so I think they were probably due to lose one.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think Florida sort of surprised them, caught them off guard. That will not happen again.
The question I have is, you mentioned Walter Clayton, Derek. Walter Clayton has been clutch in this NCAA tournament, in the game against UConn and in the game against Texas Tech. You know, the Gators are able to execute when they're down. That's a great thing to have, right? You're never out of a game. The Gators are never out of a game. But those scenarios are dicier in the Final Four. If Auburn builds a big lead against Florida, will they be able to do it again? I think Auburn, which had a lot of questions. Remember, Auburn went into the tournament having lost 3 of 4. They were still the number one overall seed because of their body of work across the season. But there were questions about, is Auburn slipping? And you know, they got a test from Creighton in the second round. But I think Auburn is picking right back up. So I think Florida, I wouldn't test Auburn in terms of falling behind and thinking that you can come back.
I look at this because when the bracket came out, I think, and I asked this question. I said, of the number one seeds, which number one seed you believe, which one of these number one seeds do you feel fall first? And I'm not talking about Final Four, because once you've that's different, because especially if all four of y'all make it, which they have, it's like, okay, now we just take that question off the board. But when I asked that question, it was at the beginning of it, and I said, which one of these number one seeds do you feel will lose first or could lose in sort of an upset form? And first thing I said was Auburn. I just thought Auburn was that team.
Well, Duke had won the ACC.
Exactly.
Houston had won the Big 12.
Uh-huh.
Florida had won the SEC.
Absolutely.
Auburn was struggling down the stretch.
Absolutely.
So it made sense to say Auburn is vulnerable.
Pick Auburn. But what we've seen is the more and more they played, it just seems that they started to recapture what they had at the beginning of the season. And then when they play Michigan State, another team that can kind of play that sort of physical ball, they were able to beat them. Now you look at Auburn totally different. If they win, it's like, okay, well, they should win because they were the number one seed overall. But more importantly than that, because of how they started to play once they got into the tournament, minus the first game, I think the first game they may have, you know, it may have been close the first half. That then after that they end Auburn, up blowing
them out. Auburn, the game against Alabama State in the first half.
Yeah.
I do think at one point Alabama State went to the free throw line with an opportunity to take the lead and missed both free throws.
Yeah,
but so, they were there. I think Auburn won the game by 20.
Exactly.
But it was tight. Remember Alabama, although Alabama lost in the Elite Eight, we were at Boomba's. They mm-hmm. were getting the test from Robert Morris.
Exactly.
But Auburn, and then they had the game against Creighton, and Creighton was right there. And then Auburn used a run in the middle of the second mm-hmm. half to pull away. But it didn't look. There was a time where I wasn't sure Auburn was going to survive the first weekend.
Yeah, so you look at, but you saw as they started to, things started to look a little bit different with Auburn. So when you have these, when you have Auburn now, they're in the Final Four with the rest of these number ones. It wouldn't be out of the realm of, you know, possibility that Auburn wins a whole thing. But I could say that about Florida. I could say that about Duke. I could say that about Houston. But here's the question. And it sort of alludes to the Cinderella, but not in that sense. Moving forward, considering the landscape of college basketball now, do you think we will start to see more chalk, meaning number ones playing each other, and people picking number ones now? Because before, it wasn't odd to see no one picking, you know, at least two of the number ones to get out of the Sweet 16. Now, because of the stacking of the team, so to speak,
yeah,
more number ones, when you're, I think it's going to change betting. Let's just say that. I think it changes betting.
I think you're probably right. For all the reasons we've been talking about, mm-hmm. that the top teams with the most money mm-hmm. are now only getting better at how to distribute the money and identify mm-hmm. the talent. I think that's going to happen in a lot of the sports. Football would be another one mm-hmm. that I think will happen. That being said, here I'm really intrigued about both of these matchups. I had the only number one seed I thought was going to lose in my bracket was mm-hmm. was Houston, but I had not watched Houston as much as the other teams, and the more I watched Houston, I was wrong about Houston. So I think they're every bit as good. The rematch component of this is intriguing about the Florida-Auburn, because I think Florida surprised Auburn. I don't think Auburn, especially at Auburn, thought that anybody could come into that place and beat them as soundly as they did. But maybe, as Bruce Pearl looks back on that, maybe he thought that was a good lesson for them to learn. I think Florida, too, has struggled more to get there in the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
They've really had to work for it. They were beat by Texas Tech. Texas Tech had them in the grip, and Clayton sort of bailed them out. The same was true against UConn. I don't know that you can do that again against Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That was an incredible individual performance. So Florida, the rest of their guys, I don't think are playing as well as I saw them play in the regular season, where I saw so many different guys make plays. Their depth is really big. I'm not seeing that show up as much. So I don't think Florida has had their A game throughout the tournament, and that would concern me a little bit.
What's also interesting is that Auburn played all three other teams in the Final Four. I can't imagine that's
yes.
happened very often. They obviously played Florida because they're in the same conference. They played Houston. They won. They lost to Duke on the road in the ACC-SEC Challenge. So Auburn has experience with all of the other teams in the Final Four.
Yeah. This is the matchup that I think jumps out to me about the Houston-Duke game. Has Duke you've watched a lot of Duke games.
All of them.
Has Duke been really guarded well? Who has done the best job defensively on Duke's offense that you could say?
That's a good question.
I think they might face the best defense they've faced.
Oh,
all
so
year.
Clemson?
Yes. Clemson absolutely. I mean, no question about the best defense they faced all year, because Houston is the best defensive team in the country. Houston reminds me of Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
Clemson beat Duke at Clemson. I guess that would have been in February. That's the only game Duke has lost since Thanksgiving, because two of their three losses came in November, one against Kentucky and one against Kansas. So Houston does remind me of Clemson, and Clemson was able to shut down Cooper Flagg. Cooper Flagg made a run, an individual run at the end of the game to make things interesting, but that is one of his worst performances of the season. So Clemson, I think, is the closest thing to what Duke has faced with Houston coming up, and Clemson had the right blueprint for that game. So, you know, as I said, you know, Duke, by the way, and we'll get to this at Take It to the Bank, Duke is a 5.5-point favorite.
Yeah.
That seems like a lot to me.
Another component of the Houston-Duke game, and Duke has overcome this all year, is Duke is a younger team.
Yes.
And they don't look younger. Right? They're awfully good.
Houston has the distinct engine experience.
Houston has got older guys. I do wonder if they can get a little bit of, you know, neutralizing Flag by just being tougher, older. Like, if anybody's ever watched, it's a great 30 for 30, the Survive in Advance. Derek Wittenberg, who is one of the great stars of that whole documentary, because he's just so entertaining to listen to. He was the senior on the NC State team, and he was talking about playing against Michael Jordan. And, you know, when he sits there all these years later, we look back on Michael Jordan as a god, the greatest of all time, all of that stuff. But he was giving his perspective at the time in 1983. He goes, Michael Jordan was a sophomore. I was a senior. I was going to kick his bleep. You know, that's how he looked on him, because he was older. And I do think that Houston might have a little bit of that going against Duke, because physically you're a little more mature, a little stronger. Duke has overcome this all year. But Houston might be able to be right there and slow Duke's offense down, because if you're not a good defensive team, mm-hmm. Duke will score 95 yeah. points easy. They've got too many guys that make plays, and Flag is so tough to guard.
And Duke has – and look, one of the things I got wrong in Take It to the Bank, which we'll find out shortly, is I hammered the over in the Duke-Alabama game. Duke completely shut down Alabama
yes.
in the Elite Eight. So Duke can play
defense,
too.
Duke can play D, no doubt. That's an underrated part of Duke.
I mean, Alabama, which I believe is the which was the highest scoring offense in the country, scored 65 points against Duke after hitting, what was it, 25 threes two nights before?
Yes.
So, I mean, that's an underrated aspect of it.
And that's the weakness of Alabama, was defense, and Duke carved up Alabama when they had the ball. Alabama does not have the defense that Houston has. I am curious, too, and I don't know their personnel well enough. How do they choose to guard Flag? Do they try to put a guard on Flag? Do they have a tweener that has enough size to bother Flag size? Because Flag can become a point guard, right? If you put a big guy on Flag, you got no chance, because he's gonna take you to the basket. He's a very tough matchup. So how does Kelvin Sampson try to guard Flag? Does he have a guy? Because the easiest thing to do is say, we've got a defender who can hold his own.
They have Juwan Roberts, who is 6'8". They could put Juwan
yes.
Roberts on him.
And he's an older guy who's the type of guy that I'm talking about. But I don't know if he's the guy you would prefer, because you got to guard Duke's big guys, too. Mm-hmm. Duke's got some unbelievable.
Yeah, it's big 7-footer.
That is Duke's advantage,
yeah.
which you saw against Alabama.
Yeah, Houston's not a huge team.
Duke does not start a player under 6'6".
I mean, and Houston, I'm looking at their guys. They're smaller. They don't have a guy in the 6'10 range. Their tallest guy is 6'8". So they're, of the guys that play,
they're
average height, 243 is Houston.
I think Houston, they're able to play that brand of basketball, that physical brand of basketball. They were able to play that against UT.
Right, and
they
UT was shook
exactly.
from the beginning.
So, if again, it goes back to styles and how the officials are officiating the game. If they officiate the game the way they officiated the game, Houston versus Tennessee, then I'm not sure how much the size factor will come into play, because Houston is a flat-out good defensive team, just good. They smother you. But if it's called tight, I can still see it being a good game, but it will come into play later in the game where now you got guys in foul trouble and we can't be as aggressive as we want to.
615-737-1025, your thoughts on the Final Four tomorrow in San Antonio, Florida and Auburn in the first game, Duke and Houston in the second, and of course the national title game on Monday. 615-737-1025. The Atlanta Braves country road trip is coming to town and teaming up with the Nashville Predators and 1025 The Game. Join us at the BetMGM Sports Lounge inside Bridgestone Arena on Wednesday, April 16th for a Braves watch party as they take on the Tampa Bay Rays at noon. Willie, make sure you're not wearing all of that net stuff. They might not let you in. There will be free giveaways.
I could be the heel that comes in with all my Mets stuff. They could throw me out and have the crowd go crazy. Get out of here!
There will be free giveaways like hats and t-shirts.
You're gone!
Plus, you could win autographed baseballs and free tickets. For more details, visit thegamenashville.com/events. D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 1025-1063 The Game. Hey, tomorrow, don't miss Nashville Super Speedway's pre-race concert contest, Nashville's next rising star, at Dierks Bentley's Whiskey Row from 1 to 5. The contest will be emceed by our very own Big Joe and special guest DJ Mojo. Pray for Mojo. We'll keep the crowd hyped up all afternoon. For more details, visit thegamenashville.com/events. It's about that time. I think Shador Sanders' pro day is starting now, or it's already started. Who the hell knows? But it's happening today. And Charles Robinson, friend of the station, he goes on Robbie and Rex Road every week, has a column at Yahoo Sports. As Shador Sanders and Travis Hunter take pro day stage, the NFL draft decisions loom for Titans, Browns, and Giants. And Charles Robinson writes in part, quote, Shador will have his closing argument in front of representatives from all 32 NFL teams. The expectation is that the session will take on a format clapping back against what some evaluators think are holes in his game. So expect throws showcasing his arm strength and velocity, as well as plenty of movement during the session meant to convey elements of elite athleticism that some believe is not consistently evident on his game tape. It's coming at an important moment for Sanders, as multiple league sources are now taking notice of the abundant homework that the Cleveland Browns and New York Giants are doing on deeper tier quarterbacks like Jackson Dart from Ole Miss, Tyler Shuck from Louisville, and Quinn Ewers of Texas. While the deeper dive in those organizations doesn't necessarily raise a red flag about Shador's draft stock, it at least raises a larger conversation about where he would fit in the draft if he ultimately gets beyond the first three picks.
I mean, as they're showing Shador Sanders on television right now, and they're showing the touch, the accuracy, the ability to escape out of the pocket or buy time, and to find guys down the field. These are things, traits that, you know, I think evaluators have high on their board when they're discussing whether to draft a quarterback or not. So, I mean, if we're sticking just on Cam Ward, but Shador Sanders, I don't know. I think the movements he's going to do here's, and it goes along the lines with the article you read earlier about the, you know, the traits or, you know, overanalyzing or, you know, whatnot, certain traits or certain things in regards to a college quarterback, why it's been so difficult to project that guy. I think what he's going to show or try to show, and whether it helps him or not, I don't know, but he said it, the athleticism, his ability to move around in the pocket, his ability to make those throws on the run, the rollouts, the boot, stuff like that. He will do, I'm sure, a lot of that. But I'm not sure how much, because those are the things he showed in college. And people still figured he's not as athletic as, say, a Cam Ward or some of these other quarterbacks in this year's draft. So I don't know him doing that. How much more is it going to change the minds of evaluators, you know, on where they're going to draft him? I think if the Giants want to take him, are they going to say, well, I mean, he's not as athletic, so we're not going to take him. Because it's not giving you a true picture of what it's going to look like. You run different when 6'6", 2, you know, 300 is chasing you than when it's nobody.
Yes,
you know, so I don't know how that changes what you think about Cam Ward. I mean, not Cam Ward, but Shedeur Sanders. I'm just saying from a athletic standpoint.
I think my biggest question is, does the narrative change? I think this is what he's predicting. I would hesitate to make a prediction. I'm not knowledgeable enough to know. But I am curious if the chatter, the narrative changes on Sanders after this day. I think that's a very important part of what happens between here and the draft day, from the Titans' perspective especially. I think the Titans would love for Sanders' stock to go up.
Yeah, because somebody did that may, you know,
and for that matter,
put a
Hunter.
Team, yeah, in a position where
what is
well,
Hunter
I think
doing?
Cleveland's going to take one of these guys, so maybe I should move up ahead of Cleveland.
Right, something like that. What is Hunter doing today?
There have been some conflicting reports. I believe it was initially reported that he was not going to participate, but now he's running routes. So he is running routes at Colorado's Pro Day.
I want to see him
running
run
routes
the 40.
With Sanders throwing, or is that a separate?
No, I think he'd be running routes with Sanders throwing. But I want to see him run the 40. I do. I want to. I know he's. I would assume he's fast. I want to see how fast he is, because if he goes out there and he runs a 4.29, 4.3 flat, that may push him up in some people's eyes.
What if he rate, like, is it a 4? If he runs a 4.4, does that kind of like say, I don't know if I want him as a wide receiver? Like, what's the number if he
runs
the 40?
What's the cutoff for him to be a viable wide receiver?
I think if you want him as your number one receiver, because we've already seen Golden, he may be number two right now, and he ran a 4.2 something.
I think it was a 4.29.
Yeah, he ran a 4.29. You need to run in a 4.3. You do, at least to me. You can't be clocked at a 4.43, something like that. No. If I'm going to take you ahead of Golden, who has shown some explosiveness, and he's a punt returner too, something you don't do, and they want you to be this Deion Sanders type of guy. Deion Sanders said he ran a 4.3, right? He said he ran a 4.2. I'm just saying what he said. He ran a 4.2. I need you to run at least a 4 in the 4.3s. I do.
By the way, so Hunter was initially not expected to participate in any on-field work, but he is running routes as a receiver for Shedeur Sanders throwing center.
So I'm gonna ask the both of y'all. If Travis Hunter runs a 4.45, what are y'all thinking?
If he runs a what?
A 4.45 or 4.43 or 4, something like that in a 4.4.
Travis Hunter,
which would not be impressive in your mind.
Exactly. Would it be impressive in your mind considering what they've hyped him? And he's lived up to it in college. He lived up to it. He was more than that. But if he comes back and run a 4.4, you're thinking like, I didn't expect that. No.
Again, if I'm the Titans, I'm hoping that Hunter really.
I'm hoping he runs a 4.3.
Yeah, like I want people buzzing about him.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want. I want leverage at the top.
615-737-1025, your thoughts on Colorado's Pro Day, which is underway in Boulder. 615-737-1025. We will wrap up the week by taking it to the bank. That's coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game. D-Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025-1063, the game. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan. Derek Mason had to step out for an appointment, so Derek is gone. But we do have his picks. He made sure to give them to the commissioner before he left the building. By the way, Take It to the Bank is presented by F&M Bank. Their mission is to make lives better by making banking easier. Easy for me to say. All right, David James, let's recap last week.
All right, boys. So I have to start with myself just because I was the loser of the week. I went 0 for. Here's the sounder. Let me find the sounder.
Oh.
Never a good sound.
It was a very – ah, man. I was so close. But I said Michigan State would make the Final Four. They did not. It was a – it was a sad day for me and all the other
and Derek as well.
And Derek, we'll worry about Derek later. but I also had the over 144.5 for the UT-UK game. It was so close. It was 143.
Mm. Oh, so you were bad beats.
Yeah, bad beats.
You were
man.
Bad beats.
It was
yes.
Have you notified Scott Van Pelt that
I
you'd
have
like
not,
to?
I wish I should have done that, but I forgot to notify SVP. And be on the great show there. But I also said Florida -6.5 and Houston -8.5. So a bad weekend for old David. But we'll go to the you guys who had pretty good weeks. You know, Adam, you said UT would cover. I believe
against Kentucky.
Against Kentucky.
It did, absolutely
I
did.
I had, listen, I am. Give me a minute. I also you also said Houston covers 8.5.
Did not.
You said Tech would cover.
I did
though,
say
for
that.
6.5.
Okay.
And then you said the over Duke.
That
and
did not happen.
That definitely did not
so
happen.
So 2 of 4 for me.
And so you got 6 total points for 158 total points.
Okay.
Look at you.
All right.
Now, let's go to Willie.
How many points do you have?
Oh, my bad. I had 131, so I am dead last.
Okay.
So at this point, I'm just here for fun.
fair enough.
I'm having a great time. That's all I'm here to
fair
do.
Fair enough.
I'm here to enjoy some time with the boys. But, Willie, you said the winner of Duke and Bama would have over 100 points.
That's the only one I missed.
That was the only one Willie missed. He got Auburn -8.5, Purdue +8.5, and Tennessee -4.5 for a total of 9 points.
All right.
And
I'll take it.
You know what the your final score is, though? 159.
159.
Okay.
159. So where am I at?
Right now you are in second place. I'm tracking these. So yes. Willie, you have 159. I have 158. David has 131.
And Derek had Bama -6.5, UT -4.5. He's had Chaz 20 or more points, and Auburn -8.5. He only got one of those, which was UT, for a total of 174 total points.
174?
Yeah.
I think he went 4 for 4 last week. Or did you go for 4 for 4 last week?
No, I went 3-1, but he didn't go 4 for 4,
No,
did
no,
he?
He got...
No, not this week, the week before, I meant.
Okay.
Yeah, the week before, yeah. The week before he had, like this week he got...
See, I'm still playing the whole season under protest, because I feel like early in the year, D-Mace was getting like 6 or 7 ways of scoring.
We were slow to close the loophole.
Yes.
Okay, listen.
But
He's a crafty one. To give my points had to be through me.
Okay, hold on. So let me just make sure I have the standings correct. Derek at 174, Willie at 159,
yes.
Me at 158,
yes.
David at 131. Okay, yes. So just for all of you out there, this is the last official Take It to the Bank. We will do some national championship game props on Monday, which we will add to our total score. But yeah. this is our last real
take it to the bank of the season.
Not forever.
We will crown a champion.
Yes, yeah. Not forever.
And of course, F&M Bank will continue on and make some picks every Friday, but we'll have to start a new season.
Yes.
We'll just do it for week to
week.
This
is the season finale.
The season finale.
This
yes.
is the season finale of Take It to the Bank. All right, well, Derek.
Now, how do we find a way for us to be able to catch Derek? That's the question. Can we... Especially with Derek not here. Can we?
Because
he's probably not listening, or maybe he is listening. But how can we find a way for if Derek misses all of his picks and we get all of our picks, can we mathematically have a chance? We want drama.
We
right?
do.
At least going into Monday. Can we have a chance to be close enough going into Monday that you're telling me there's a chance?
If D-Mace goes 0-4 and you both go
4-0. Maybe going
there's
into
a
Monday,
going on Monday, there's a chance.
So okay. You're telling me there's a chance.
Derek is in the lead. He gave David his pick. So David, read Derek's
Derek is
picks.
Screaming in the car right now.
Yes.
That's
he's
not
like,
true.
No.
It's impossible.
I'm going to get all my picks right. So D-Mace has taking. He's taking Auburn and the points.
Okay.
He is taking Houston in the points. Walter Clayton will lead all scorers in Final Four. In the Final Four.
So I assume he means he will be the leading scorer among the national semifinal games. Like, will Walter Clayton score more points than the other player in the game
he
played on Saturday?
He said he will lead all scorers in Final Four. So the Final Four on Saturday.
I mean, okay. In theory, if you had 60 points in the semifinal even if your team lost, you could still have that.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you scored enough points in the semifinal.
And his last one is going over on dunks for Houston. 2.5.
I did find that interesting. So
are we all gonna do that one? That's a fun prop one there.
We can do it if you want. Or Derek can take it as his own.
I might just go ahead and jump in on that one.
Okay.
As one of our four.
Okay.
So it's optional. Right? Derek took it. I'm going to go opposite because I got to catch Derek. I'll go under. He's going over. I'll go under on Houston dunks.
I will go under as well.
Okay.
I'm just going to, you know, have fun again. I'm going to go over.
Okay. So you and D-Mace are on the other side.
And Derek is clarifying with Walter Clayton. He's saying just in the Final Four.
Just in the semifinal
games. Just in the semifinal games. He will be the leading scorer among all players.
High point man. Okay.
Okay. So I guess I will have to do three picks now because we're all going to include the dunk as one of ours.
I'll give you guys just that one.
Okay, that's fine. Houston will cover against Duke. Duke is a 5.5-point favorite. I don't think I would love if Duke covered. I don't think it's going to happen. So Houston will cover against Duke. I'm leaving it open for Duke to win, but Houston will cover. Cooper Flagg will score at least 20 points. And when you say 20 points, he's averaging 19.5 points per game in the NCAA tournament. So I will say Cooper Flagg will score at least 20 points against Houston. I'm going to go to the women's Final Four here for a second. Mm. I'm going to take the UCLA women to cover against UConn. UConn is a 7.5-point favorite. UCLA is a number one seed. UConn is a 2 seed, but UConn is UConn in women's basketball.
I do recall there was a big discussion on how they did this draw, and that was part of the discussion, how the committee decided to do the 1 seeds, and that was a big factor.
So I will have the UCLA women covering against UConn, a 7.5-point favorite. So that with the dunk, am I done? Or do I have
You have one more.
Okay. I have Auburn outright against Florida. I think Auburn beats Florida.
Do you want the 2.5 points? They're an underdog.
No, I'm just going to say out. I'll just say
it. It went straight up. Okay.
Went straight up.
The commissioner will take that into account.
I will. Okay.
All right. So I have the under on the dunks. I will say that Houston is going to make it tough on Cooper Flagg. And he averages 18.9 points per game.
For the season?
For the season, yes.
He averages 18.9 for the season.
18.9. So
19.5 in the tournament.
Okay, so let's say under 19 points for Cooper Flagg in the semifinal against Houston. Now,
okay.
The thing is, he could score 10 points and have, you know, 12 assists and rebounds. But I think they're gonna really do a good job on Cooper Flagg with that good defense. That being said, I've got Duke and Florida in my final in the bracket, so I've got to stick with those two. I am hemming and hawing on the point spread here because I think Houston's going to be right there, but you know 5.5, it could just be a couple free throws at the end of the game, a desperation shot that misses. So I'm just going to ride it all the way out. I'll say Florida -2.5 and Duke -5.5. Those are my four.
David?
My team's on the court.
All right, so I'm going to say Walter Clayton has 20-plus points against Auburn. I think Houston will cover against Duke +5.5. And I will also be going to the women's Final Four. I think South Carolina versus Texas will go over 125.5. I like South Carolina. They're really, really good. And also, I think UCLA and South Carolina will meet in the championship game.
So you have UConn. I mean, excuse me, you have UCLA pulling the upset against UConn, even though UConn is a lower seeded team than
yes,
UCLA.
Yes.
It'll be interesting, but that'll do it for us this week. We hope you have a wonderful weekend. The Final Four, I'm looking forward to it. I'm also nervous as all hell. We'll see what state I'm in on Monday. We'll see. And if Duke wins on Monday, I'm also going to be a nervous wreck because the national championship game is
Let's
on
just
Monday.
Hope you don't end up on the floor of your shower with a robe on, with the hot water running.
We'll see.
Or a cold water running, was it?
It was a cold floor with hot water.
Cold floor, hot water.
A hot floor with cold water would be, I would have to go to the hospital for that one, I think. But that'll do it for us. Stillman & Company coming up next. And on behalf of Derek Mason, who can't be here, be loved, love on your people, have a wonderful weekend. Peace.